Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Who knows when we'll see Ken Roczen? Actually,
sounds like you have some information.
And you're looking at Jet Lawrence and you're thinking, can he go even faster?
What's up, guys? Hey, welcome to Title 24. We got a lot to talk about Thunder Valley this week. We got a special guest coming on the show also. You know, I just want to take the time right now to thank our sponsors, United Motorsports. Six locations across Ohio and Kentucky, and Boxo USA, some of the greatest tools out there, and also Quadlock phone cases. Just want to say thank you to guys. I'm coming from Newport Beach, California, and let's get right into it. I just want to introduce editor-in-chief of RacerX and Davey Coombs. Thanks for coming on to Title 24.
Hey, right on. Can't believe I'm filling in for the GOAT, but I'll take it. Long time ago, we were talking about doing a podcast together. It was going to be called Title 15.
zero for you, right? And 15 for Ricky. Is that correct? Is that where we're coming from?
Let me do the math real quick. Yeah, between Ricky and I, we've got 15 titles and 150 wins.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Ricky has left me here to fend for myself. He's out on a fishing trip. So hopefully he's catching some big ones while you're picking up the slack for him here in the studio.
I'm an admitted fan and follower of both of you guys, and I really enjoy the Title 24 podcast, and you guys are off to a great start.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so we'll jump right into it. So Thunder Valley this weekend. Davey, we were able to talk a little bit before jumping on here for the live show, and you didn't get to go this weekend, but you watched it on TV. I'm sure you religiously watch it, and man, I just have to say, Thunder Valley was a real man's track, ruddy, rough, from a fan's perspective, they had to love it. What did you think?
Well, like you said, it was no easy day. Watching the ruts, watching those guys navigate, I'm always impressed by that. Diversity of the whole series. You know, we went from what was admittedly a dry, sketchy surface, maybe even narrow in places at Hangtown, to all of a sudden you're literally in the mountains, on the side of a mountain, on a man's track, and same results, but wow, just a different look and a different feel, and I really enjoyed it. I didn't get to go because, you know, we obviously have High Point ahead, so I watched on Peacock sitting in the announcer's tower at High Point in between mowing sessions, so it was fun to watch and also fun to be out there working.
Yeah, no, that's right. High Point is one of your guys' personal races that you guys have. Always loved that track, and that'll be next weekend. But yeah, so let's jump right into, you know, Moto One at Colorado there. You know, pretty big first turn pileup. I know that's a topic that we'll get into here soon about metal grates and things like that. But you know, guys were able to salvage themselves. Looks like we got a couple star bikes out. Big, do you see that big pileup? Not way before the first turn. Definitely took some guys out. Ferris with an arm injury. I think Jet Reynolds with shoulder. Man, there was a handful of guys. You see Hampshire on the ground right here. Joe trying to get up. You know, and Joe put in a solid ride to come back up. Yeah, I think get it inside the top five, I believe. After that, you know, and definitely tough conditions to have to come through the pack with a first turn pileup.
Yeah, and you know, I had just kind of picked up on that the Spanish kid, Guillaume Farris, and I was really impressed by him the first 2 weeks. So I was, you know, keeping an eye on him, and, you know, that unfortunately lasted 50 yards off the starting gate. And, you know, these first turn crashes and start straight crashes have always been part of the sport. And, but we got to figure out a way to mitigate them as much as we can. And you hate to see a kid, you know, all those guys go down, but it looks like, you know, Farris had to be transported and we might not get to see him here for a little while. But it was, you know, it was just one of those chain reaction things, Ryan. I call it a pinball crash.
Yes. Yeah, no, totally. It's once one guy gets in, it's tough with the start being uphill like that. And like I said, we're going to get into the starting greats and I will talk a little bit more on why I think that why the crash started, where it started and how that it was way out of the first turn. And we'll come to that here in a little bit, but yeah, nonetheless, total bummer for those guys. But, as you can see, Hunter Lawrence, another outstanding performance, took second first moto, seemed like he, you know, not the greatest of starts, was actually kind of, I think, held up in that first turn pileup, but was able to come up, put himself in a great position for the overall and second moto. It seemed like he just rode to the win. What did you see in that moto or in the lights class, Davey, from, you know, who's a standout? What do you think of, Hayden's ride, and the rest of the guys?
Well, let's start with Hunter, and you know, maybe you can have some insight on this. It seems like in the first moto, he's being real tentative at the beginnings, and this goes across each of the first three rounds. He did get to second this time, but it's a weird sort of, you know, thing we're seeing where he starts out slow, gets himself in the right position to get the overall, then second moto, you know, he goes all out, and he's riding like he has the championship in mind already, that he's not thinking, you know, and I remember Ricky saying this when I used to interview him, he'd be like, there are motos and there are days when the track is going to give you a second or the day's going to give you a third, take the points and be ready to fight the next time out and don't push it and make mistakes. And Hunter has just been a master at that. I know he probably wants to go 1-1 like his brother, but whatever he's doing, it's working. He may not be perfect like number 18 is so far, but it's definitely been a winning formula for Honda HRC, both in Supercross and Motocross.
You know, I think you're right. Definitely the first motos have been a little bit slow for Hunter. I think what maybe I had heard some rib injuries coming into Hangtown or Paula round one. And, you know, I think that being that way, the technical track that we had this weekend, it works into his favor. Like these guys are making calculated decisions and they also, they're mitigating their risk on, and then also know when to push for that, to get that win. So it's like first moto wasn't in a great position, salvaged up to a second, knows that that's going to be able to get an overall win if he wins the second moto, if it were to line up exactly the same with Cooper, up front, but, didn't happen for Cooper. Joe Shimoda also in the mix there, that these are championship guys that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And right now, like Joe was caught up in that first turn, crash, you know, he's leaving a lot of points on the table. And, you know, with Hunter being able just to click off these 2-1s, 1-2s, and eventually he's going to get those 1-1s, the points gap's going to spread fairly quickly. So these guys are going to have to figure out how to stop him.
Yeah. And, you know, Hunter's been all over the world. Obviously, he's from Australia. He spent some time in Europe. You know how different tracks are over there, how different the system is. And then, you know, when he came here to the States in 2019, he was not quite consistent. And he had some injuries. And all of a sudden, it started really happening for his little brother. And he didn't panic. And he's ridden very pragmatically this year. And I'll give you another example. Think about the little, you know, thing he got into with Hayden Deegan there. Yep. Hayden's young. Hayden's a rookie. He's probably thinking, you know, got to get that first trophy. Got to get that first moto win like he did last week. And his inconsistency, you know, is showing in the second moto. But, yeah, you know, I don't think Hunter Lawrence is going to throw away a championship because of a perceived, you know, on the bike insult or whatever you want to call that. He's just riding smart and you could hear it afterwards when they asked him about it. He just shrugged and said, you know, basically I'm here for the championship, and that's just the way that, that Hayden rides.
Exactly. I think we actually have a soundbite of that podium with Hunter being interviewed.
The Hayden Deegan pass there, was that something you expected? I know it caught me off guard a little bit, but you guys were going at it there for a second.
Yeah. I seen how he races in Supercross, so I'm kind of aware of what kind of rider he is and just did my best to navigate it. And, you know, I'm racing for a championship and just always racing ahead in my moto. So, yeah, on to the next one.
And yeah, he basically was just talking about him. You know, he understands the way Hayden rides, a bit aggressive, maybe, you know, he's just got to sit back and wait. You know, he knows he's better. He knows he's got the experience on him, and nothing to take away from Hayden. He's riding very, very, very well right now. But just with that added experience that, that Hunter has, it definitely pays off, and you can see the difference.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, with the exception of possibly Jet in the 450 class, Hayden Deegan's been a revelation. He's really good. You know, he's fun to watch. He's aggressive, as you saw right there, a little look over on the tabletop. but he's fast. You know, he starts well and he's strong. And I know the way Brian and Marissa have raised all their kids. He's competitive. He's entertaining. And you know, he just needs to be a little more patient, I think. And he needs to remember that sometimes what goes around comes around. And, you know, but right now I think Hunter is looking forward, and, you know, he could have pulled the trigger right there. But he didn't.
They had a great battle back and forth. You know, and you can see the, like I said, the experience, it prevails there, you know, with Hunter being a little bit older, a little more under a season, but like you, to your point, as Hayden is, said this before, he's kind of like a unicorn. You know, you don't see those guys come up very, very often. Sometimes a lot of these guys, it takes them a couple years to get their footing right in inside that 250 class, especially right now for how deep it is. So he's doing a phenomenal job. And, you know, we'll see what happens at High Point, you know. So
yeah, and it's another track that I don't think Hayden's ever been to. And you know, that I have a lot of respect for that, the fact that he can adapt so well. You know, James Jason Wygant were talking on the show about how Hayden didn't even get to do press day at Colorado. So that was all new to him. I mean, he had to hit the switch in the morning, and he had the fastest lap time of the whole race. It was Hayden Deegan, even faster than Jet. Granted, that was the second lap of the first moto when the track was at its absolute smoothest. But, yep, you know, you can't teach pure speed. You can get faster. You can get stronger. But you got to have it naturally. And the kid does.
I totally agree. So yeah. Perfect segue into talking about speed and all those things we were just talking about. Jet Lawrence wins again, 6-0, led every lap again. I mean, the story, I don't know if there is a story here other than he's phenomenal. I know that we have some guys that are out. I know there's been some topics and guys are like, oh, what happens if the other guys, the Barcia, the 5 or 6 factory guys that we have that are currently benched from injuries. To be honest, guys, I don't see it playing out a whole lot differently. I think Jet right now is just on another level when it comes to the way he's riding, his starts, his program. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I know the topic of 24-0 has come up, you know, and it's maybe a little early to say that he's going to do that, but our 22-0, I think it is now, with missing that there were 11 rounds instead of 12, but amazing ride so far. What do you think, Davey?
You know, I've made the analogy, and this dates me, I know, but I remember Jean-Michel Bale in 1989 coming over for the first time. We'd seen him on a 125 before. He did a couple supercrosses in the 250 class. And then we show up at the first outdoor national at Gatorback that year, and he put a 30-second whooping on everyone. And it was like, wow, is that beginner's luck? And he was just riding around on his toes and just had this really unique style. And I see that in Jet. And, you know, I'll be honest, I remember your first 450 national, Glenn Helen in 09. If I remember correctly, it was a solid, emphatic 1-1. The reason we don't talk about it more is because, unfortunately, you hurt your knee before Hangtown, the second round. But there are certain guys who come along. I would include you. I would include Ricky. I would include the Dunge in 2010. Yep. They just from the get-go in this class, they can really do it. And I think we're seeing something really special in Jet. The one thing that he and his brother really have in common is one thing that Ricky had as well. And that's they're using Johnny O'Mara as their, yes, as their coach, as their mentor. Johnny is, you know, is a supercross champion, a motocross champion. He's been training guys and working with guys ever since, you know, RC got with him when Ricky was Team Green and Johnny was working at Oakley. And man, the championships.
You're dating yourself, Davey. You're dating yourself.
the championships have been coming, and you know what the two brothers collectively bring, and let's spread the wealth. Also, what Lars Lindstrom and the whole Honda crew has brung. They're having a phenomenal year. The bikes are on point. The team is working together. They lost Roczen, you know, before the season started, had to replace it with Colt Nichols. That didn't go great, but man, they swept Supercross and they're undefeated basically outdoors. So that's a juggernaut over at Team Honda right now, kind of like the early 80s. And I know that dates me too, but
yes, it's almost like they can't do any wrong right now. You know, they got their program is very, very solid. They have solid riders. They're fast. They're smart is the big thing. They know when to push it.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
We're going to jump into thanking our sponsors here. United Motorsports has 6 locations across Ohio and Kentucky. So big thank you to United Motorsports and for coming on board. Boxo USA also, great guys. Thank you. They make some of the great products, moto boxes, ADV, tool rolls for your side-by-side, anything you need, they have. I believe it's a lifetime warranty also. So thank you to those guys. Also Quadlock is the leader in phone cases in mounts, and they have a mount for everything that you need: motorcycles, bicycles, cars, boats, side-by-sides, you name it, they probably have it. So they have a pretty awesome anti-vibration mount for side-by-sides, adventure riding, things like that. And we'll jump right into the story of the weekend. We have to talk about it. Ty Master Pool, you know, privateer, racing out of his own truck. You know, it's if you call grassroots, this is your guy right here, Ty Master Pool. Put in an unbelievable ride, making a pass on AC. Also, Dylan Ferrandis right there. Davey, what do you think of this privateer up inside the, I think, fourth overall, I believe is what it was after we were all said and done?
You know, the numbers were actually unlucky for Ty, because he went 5-4 and by all intents and purposes stole the show in that second moto. But he still got sixth overall. It was just a weird, okay, one of those weird days where, you know, like when Robbie Raynard went 7-1 and won the Steel City National. And another time you go 7-1 and you end up fifth overall. It's just, it was, yep, it was weird. But so I've known the Masterpool family for a really long time. They've been through, you know, the absolute, you know, worst things that could happen to a family in this sport. And now, you know, with Ty, he's, you know, he's so phenomenally talented, but had so much bad luck. And, you know, he had a brief stay with Star Racing and he just kept getting hurt. And even this year, you know, Jerry, the father, put him in the 250 class to start out. And
yes, they,
you know,
did.
Decided after one round, you know, if you're going to be a privateer, you're probably better off, you know, rather than racing against those Star Motos and HRC motors and Pro Circuit motors, to you know, get up in the 450 class. And I know it was a gamble, but man, he was really impressive at Hangtown too. But I think that for the first time since he debuted at Redbud, you know, back in 2020, we saw Ty Masterpool's full potential. And I thought it was very gracious of guys like Cooper Webb to be so complimentary of him afterwards and say, you know, wow, that was amazing. He literally thought it was AC behind him. And so I hope that he can keep it going. I know that they're on a shoestring budget. You know, when your top sponsor is Sports Clips and not, you know, some big factory, you got to do it, you know, you got to run it lean. But man, I was really happy for Ty, really happy for Jerry and Tara and just the whole family. It was a cool privateer moment, unlike one that I can't. It's been a while since we had someone do that.
I was going to say, it's been a long time since we've had a privateer be able to, you know, step up and be able to, I mean, race with these factory guys, race for, I mean, for a quick few laps there. I believe he was battling for third place on the track. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was just, it was an amazing ride along with how tough the track was. It shows you that, you know, like, yes, I think great move to move out of the 250 class. I mean, if you look at that class, there's like 14 factory bikes right now, or 13 yeah, factory bikes in there. It's just stacked. Right. So, and good call on their part to notice that, okay, we got some factory guys in the 450 class that are on the sidelines. We don't have to work as hard. And what I mean by work as hard is spend the money to make their 250F sure, to be just try to be competitive with the top guys, top teams in the 250 class. The 450 is, to your point, a lot easier to go racing with. And man, it showed up on Saturday. He rode phenomenal, had some great line choices, made some passes. You know, it wasn't like he just fell into that spot. I mean, first moto was down in the first turn and ended back up around fifth.
Yeah, that was an amazing ride. And you know, I talked about how well he did in the second moto battling with factory guys. And when the first moto, he was dead last. He was 40th at the first timing loop because of that first turn crash you mentioned. And he passed 35 guys. And he passed Plessinger a couple times. I mean, really gave him a battle. And yeah, you know, in the end, I wish he'd have gotten third overall, just because it had been a better story. But I think that the motivation is there. And I don't think he's going to catch anyone by surprise at High Point. I think Coop and AP and Dylan know who number 81 is now.
Yeah, they're going to have eyes in the back of their head. You know, it comes to mm-hmm. High Point, you know, it's you know, we're this next weekend. We potentially could have some very similar conditions as what we saw there in Colorado. A little more mm-hmm. clay base, a lot of ruts and things like that. So, you know, it looks like Ty's bike's working well. He needs to get off the line and obviously get out of that first turn safely and mm-hmm. Put himself in a better position, you know. And then, you know, it's bound to, you know, probably get a fill-in spot for a factory ride. I mean, what do you think of that? Do you see that happening with the 450 class is kind of going with these guys sidelined?
If I was your old boss at Kawasaki, Ryan, I would be. Dan Fahey needs to make sure he's got Ty Masterpool's number in his cell phone. But it was incredibly impressive. You know, when I think about it, it was the kind of day that people, the privateers have at Southwick. You know, you get that local element and they get the good start and they know where every bump and everything is. But what Ty did at Colorado was it was no gimmick. He was just as fast as they were. You know, with the on a factory bike, I have a feeling. But then again, maybe that changes the
I was going to say you put Ty on a factory motorcycle, and now you have the pressure of the factory.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, like right now he's riding in a very comfortable state. He knows his surroundings very, very well. But now you put him in, because I've seen guys in the past like that where, you know, they're much better off actually as a privateer or on a team, but not with a good program, but not a factory team, because they get there and then they have the pressure and it's like, okay, now I have to perform. And that gets into their head a little bit. So maybe that could be one of the scenarios there, right? That he potentially might do better on his own.
Well, if he rides like that for the rest of the year, he will be getting some podiums. He will be getting some phone calls, but for now, you know, I hope he keeps the momentum going. He was very strong at Hangtown. It was not a one-hit wonder. You know, and knock on wood, you know, if he gets the kind of starts he used to get on the 250, look out. It could be something special.
Yep, no, for sure. So we'll move on to, I got a question for you, Davey. Aaron Plessinger, happy or disappointed after where we think or where we thought that conditions would favor him?
I would be disappointed if I were AP. You know, he's had some hard luck this year. My God, you know, throwing away that Supercross win on the last lap, you know, getting, you know, tangled up with Dylan Ferrandis and stuck under the bike here at Colorado. Yep. You know, he's an incredibly versatile rider. He's also very tall, which I know, you know, you might think that it helps you in the ruts, but as you know, and as we've seen with guys like Wyndham and Travis Pastrana, the bigger your feet, the longer your legs, the more difficult those rutted tracks can be and the more susceptible you are to injury. But you know, he's so close to winning on a 450. And yet, you know, we're 3 years into his career. He's closer than he's ever been. But, man, I thought it would have happened by now. And I would be disappointed if I were him, but I wouldn't quit doing what I'm doing. He just needs better starts.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't, I mean, there's the words of giving up in this industry those aren't words in your vocabulary here. So, yes, I would say, I would agree with you. Disappointed. We're watching him, you know, kind of, ride with Dylan Ferrandis and Cooper Webb here. And I would have thought that AP's performance with the ruddy conditions would have favored him, this weekend a bit more, but, you know, like you said, bad luck. That first 450 win has eluded him more than once, especially in Supercross there when that was almost a given. Such a bummer to see him take such a hard hit there. But yeah, it's you know, definitely going to have to get better starts. He's going to have to figure something out, because I know those guys, you know, we talked about the factories now. They want to produce some wins here. And I know KTM with Coop next on our list to talk about, you know, came back pretty early to get some SMX points. But both of those KTM guys, probably not where Roger wants them, I wouldn't think right now.
No, but at the same time, I see improvements, you know, obviously with an unfortunate tip over, you know, in the second corner really slowed him. And I believe this was the second moto.
Cooper Webb, that is.
Yeah, Cooper, you know, he got hurt at the worst possible time for motocross. And that was, you know, right in the stretch run of Supercross. And not only did it knock him out of the Monster Energy Supercross title chase, but it took away all of his prep time for outdoors. And I think that Aaron and Cooper probably have very different settings. So it's not like he could just borrow AP's settings. And, you know, AP was coming off, you know, some of his own issues and whatnot. I know he's got to be relieved that he got a contract extension with Red Bull KTM. And I think that you'll see him ride much looser with more confidence for the rest of the year. But all of those guys, whether you're, you know, Red Bull KTM, Monster Energy, Kawasaki, you're looking at Honda and you're looking at Jet Lawrence and you're thinking, can he go even faster? And I think the answer is a scary yes. Mm-hmm. So AP is going to have his work cut out for him. And I don't think it has to be a mud race. I don't think it has to be necessarily an event that he likes. I just think he needs to put together two good starts, two good motos, And man, he's got to have some good luck coming his way, because he you know, just like that tip over and collision with Ferrandis. It's things like that that just you know, it always seems to be Aaron Plessinger.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it seems like that black cloud is kind of following him around, you know, and it started, you know, he in Supercross wasn't probably not the season he wanted. And then he had that breakout ride and let's face it, man, he rode away from everybody that, I forget what round it was, but completely rode away from them. Nobody could hold a candle to him. And man, it was just that last lap, you know, making that mistake and going down. It, man, like, I'm hoping to see something, you know, come from him for sure. And at least get up there and start putting some seconds and thirds, consistency, and start building that foundation, before we go tackle a win. Right. So.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the missing man in this whole conversation, and I know Justin Barsh is out, and I know Jason Anderson's out, and it may, you know, who knows when we'll see Ken Roczen. Actually, we'll see.
Sounds like you have some information that we don't have, Davey.
I've got my fingers crossed, and I've got my Ken Roczen cardboard cutout just in case we get some
just
good
in case
news.
Getting your hopes up. You're just getting your hopes up.
A last minute entry for High Point, so we'll see. But I do want to talk about Chase Sexton, and I didn't know until I listened to the show last week that he had ridden on Wednesday. You mentioned after he got banged up on Tuesday, and now, you know, it's the whole thing's exasperated by mono. And, you know, Ryan, happened to you a couple of times in your career where you'd win a championship. And I'm thinking of 2014, you literally led the last 80 laps of Supercross and won the last four races, and then you get hurt. And it's like your whole summer's wiped out. And I think that's happened more than once to you. How does Chase rebound from going from right there on Jet's butt at the opener to he's now 100 points down?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard one, at least especially looking at the SMX point standings and looking into the future. We got Cooper Webb with 416, Chase Sexton, Aaron Plessinger down 71, Eli Tomek down 77, Adam Cincirillo 108 down. So to answer that question, David, yes, it has happened to me before, where I had an unbelievable Supercross season and end up with an injury coming into, or Seattle, for example, tore my ACL, and then missed outdoor season. Not to saying if Chase, because this happened to Chase, he's got to look at the positives in it. Mm-hmm. And after coming off of a Supercross season like he had and winning it, you got to look at the positives, and maybe this is just maybe that little bit of downtime like that he can use to then come back. Obviously he's missing out on a ton of valuable points for the SMX standings. But, you know, I think from him as a racer, a little bit of downtime, because as we know, our sport is essentially year round. We don't have a ton of, off motorcycle time. Now from actually racing, we have a bit of downtime, but as for seat time, riding on the motorcycle, we don't have a ton of off season, much at all. And, I think this is the time right now is where he can kind of just and a bit physically, but mentally relax and then come in, sharper, in a better headspace for the SMX, the last three rounds of SMX.
Yeah. And that's something I should have probably taken into account and as something that's different this year, because whereas he's 106 points down in pro motocross, he's actually still ahead of Judd Lawrence in the super motocross standings. And he does have that thing to look forward to. And whereas, you know, his absence right now is unfortunate for fans of the AMA Pro Motocross Series. He's got a chance to come back and win a lot of money. So the season's not wiped out like it was for you, you know, when you tore your knee up at Seattle, or when you got hurt, you know, in 2009 after the, you know, winning your 450 debut. So
yep,
he's and again, you know, you're looking at your teammates, you're looking at Jet, you're looking at those, you know, performances, and the expectations are going to be there for him to come back and immediately go after number 18.
100%. Yeah. That, and that's going to be the tough part. You know, like, you have Jet that's going to be racing all season, and he might be a little bit, call it tired, burnout, whatever words you want to use for that, but he's got that all season, but he's got the racing under his belt. And where you have Chase comes in a little more fresh, mentally, physically, he might be a little bit better, but also too, he doesn't have those gate drops. So you have two different scenarios. Both can work into each of their favors, you know, like it just depends on how that's going to play out at the last three, SMX rounds, which is going to be unbelievable. Like you said, the amount of championship on the line, number one, and the money that is on the line, $1 million to win the Super Motocross Championship is unbelievable. Like, me and Ricky have had conversations about it before, like, not that we wanted, another thing to race for, but man, it's nice to have that paycheck on the end of that, because we're racing anyways. Like, yeah. You know, we've go to Europe here, we do these little rounds here and there or whatever, and to try to piece together, some races. But honestly, like, it's in your backyard, and it's a boatload of money.
Yeah. I forgot to think about that. The Chicagoland race literally is at Jay Sexton's backyard. This year the dynamics are just different with everyone, but Supercross is, had its own unique storyline. Motocross, we've got some really cool things going on right now, but the unfortunate thing that's sort of hovering over all of it, and not just motocross and Supercross in America, but MXGP in Europe, is we're seeing just a really unlucky, unfortunate run of injuries. And one of the guys that you got to race with a few times before you hung up your boots, Jeffrey Herling's over in Europe. Yep. I think he may have just lost another world title to a really bad injury when he was winning a race.
Yep, I believe I kind of have a little confirmation on that. Yes, that he is hurt something in his neck and. Yeah. Potentially will be out for the next round. But like you said, one of the fastest guys on a motorcycle for outdoors. Supercross might be another question, but for outdoors, one of the fastest guys, period. And man, you got to be smart and you got to stay off the ground to win those world championships. And right now, with the way Prado's going, and very smart, gets great starts, it's looking like that may not happen again.
Yeah. And I was hoping, and I'm sure I wasn't alone, that Jeffrey might pop up for an outdoor national here in the States and maybe try an outside chance qualify for the Super Motocross Championship. But yeah, now I just hope it's a get well soon and he does get back out there. But man, that bad luck, it's been par for the course. And what's crazy is to think about, he's got a Ricky number of wins. And yes. MXGP, like 102, 103, and yet he's probably thrown away five world titles with this kind of injury. So I guess my point is it's something collectively in all series across the board, indoors, outdoors. We got some work to do. We got some data to crunch. We got some heavy conversations to have, not only with our track builders, but with our OEMs, with our athletes. To Denny Stevenson's point last week, this attrition rate can't continue. And sometimes it's just like a run of really bad luck, like with having with Ferris and Jet Reynolds in the first turn last weekend, or what happened to Jeffrey over in, Germany. None of them looked that bad. First crashes look bad, but, it's just, Is it a bad draw right now? Is it the bikes? Is it the tracks? I think those are good questions to drill down on.
Well, we got a quad luck question of the week, Davey, and it comes to the starting grates. Are metal grates the reason we're seeing a lot of first turn pileups? And this is sent in by 120_J. Quad luck question to the week. What do you, I have my own, theory on the grates. And we can elaborate a little on this more. This isn't a decision by you. This isn't a decision by Feld. This isn't a decision. This is a collective decision across Supercross and Motocross as a whole, correct?
Yeah. So ever since they went to 450s and things like engine mapping and all the, you know, complications came, it was over in Europe. MXGP went to the metal grades first. And it became sort of an advantage for them in the Motocross of Nations, because you guys, Ryan, I don't think you ever, maybe once at the Monster Cup, started on a metal grade.
Yep, Monster Cup, I believe 16, when I stepped in on a Yamaha, just decided to go race it. Yes, but that's my only time on a metal grade.
Yeah, so they've been using them in Europe for a long time, you know, more than a decade, I'm going to guess. And you know, Feld decided to start using them in Supercross. We will be using them in Super Motocross, you know, and come September. But we have a steering committee that consists of people like Dan Fahey, Roger DeCoster, Lars Lindstrom, some of the various other, you know, team managers and people at the OEMs. And they collectively wanted to do this step. And they said, look, we're using them in Supercross. We're going to use them in Super Motocross. And the designations are going to use them. And we always want to be ready and have that advantage of getting good starts at the Motocross of Nations. So it was kind of a no-brainer. And the problem, though, is after the first week, there were zero first turn crashes at Fox Raceway. And that is a hairpin left-hander and pretty long straight. You know, four motos, two LCQs, no crashes. The second corner was a different story, and I definitely think we'll be doing the track prep differently there, as RJ Hampshire really made sure that we knew that we needed to not only worry about the first turn, but the second turn in between motos. But anyway, then comes that big crash on the outside at Hangtown. That was the 12th moto of the year. And, you know, what you're seeing now is the second turn crash.
Yep.
It was the last 450 moto where we had that.
I think it was a Yamaha guy basically fly backwards into the, but to be honest, Davey, I've seen that at Hangtown before. That isn't the first time that has happened. And I know that's a debate, a topic about the metal grates. We just had a couple first turn pileups at Colorado. But take in mind that Colorado guys, we're starting, I believe the 450s, I know the 250s are, we're starting in first gear. So what happens when you start in first gear, immediately when the gate drops, literally your rear tire is barely off of over the gate and you're trying to grab second gear. But around 10,000 or, you know, 12, 13, 14,000 RPMs, these motorcycles don't shift very well. So now you get them a little bit off balance and everybody's so close, it's uphill. You start leaning on each other. And that's what happened on the inside here. You can see, I think it was Jet Reynolds and Chance Hymus, because we have video. I've watched video of it before. And they just started hanging bars a little bit. And it's like tying a rope to somebody's handlebar and pulling it right or left. And it happened to be going left in this instance. But I think this is what you see of a midway crash like this is an off balance trying to shift the motorcycle out of first gear. Because of the altitude that we see at Colorado, it's the highest it's much higher than Utah for Supercross. It's the highest motorcycle race we have on the professional circuit. So it has its own set of challenges.
Yeah. And watching that 450 crash in the first moto, you know, I just realized Ty Masterpool just lost the front end. It was a Thunder Valley tip over. I've seen a bunch of times, but you know, I don't want to minimize the fact that we're having these crashes or had a few. We're crunching the data, Ryan. We're looking at everything and trying to figure out, you know, if there is some kind of pattern here. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's time for some hard conversations and a deep look at, you know, everything from, you know, the power of the bikes, the hole shot devices, all the little gadgets we have nowadays, and just, you know, the fact that there are a lot of races. But the point is, this isn't the 31st race. This isn't the 21st race. And this was the 19th, 20th race of the year. And we've got a lot of riders out. And like I said, it transcends both Supercross and Motocross, not just in the U.S., but everywhere. And we're going to look at it. We're going to talk about it. And you know, let's watch a few more of these closely. I would like to watch. And I think one of the questions that someone asked is about that unique starting procedure that Jet Lawrence is doing. Yeah. Do we have a question on that?
Yeah, we do. Mike Lee. And this is what he says. Look at Jet's foot at the start. He wedges it in between the foot peg and the shifter. And is able to just grab a gear right out instead of sticking your foot peg or your foot back up on, you're 2 feet down, up on the deal, then up on the foot peg, then shift. He comes with the foot in front of the foot peg wedged in between the shifter and just goes straight up. And especially I don't know what Jet was actually starting in, if it was first or second, but if it was a first gear start for him, definitely a lot quicker to just jam it up into second gear.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, what Jet's doing, it just looks different. And from start to finish, I saw him after the mechanics area at Fox Raceway when he was in the second moto battling with Chase Sexton. He came into the right-handed corner in a full lock slide, both feet on the pegs, the bike sideways, and never shut off. It was like watching, David Knight, riding around the Isle of Man. It was crazy to see. And I just thought, same thing. It reminded me of seeing, some of those other, really special guys that come along, and again, I hate to say Jean-Michel Bale again. I remember Jeremy in Supercross in 1993. As soon as he got to the front, he stayed there for 7-8 years. And he was doing it with this really unique, the way he was low jumping things, not quite a scrub yet, but using those BMX tricks. Everybody does that. He changed the game. James Stewart changed the game
with the scrub. Yes.
With the scrub. And you guys had to pick up on all that. There's another thing about the Lawrence brothers that I've noticed, and they ride, especially Hunter, with his index fingers forward the whole time.
Always on the clutch, always on the front brake. Yep.
You got to be strong and you got to be disciplined to do
that.
And
I think there's just the evolution of our sport with Hunter and Jet, I believe, on the front side of that. And why I say that is watching Hunter and Jet go around all these tracks, supercross, motocross, different conditions, they look like things are happening a bit slower for them. So is it their technique is better than these guys, than the rest of the field? I believe it is a little bit. It just, to me, seems like to go the pace that they want to go, the winning pace, it seems like it's easier for them than other racers out there. And is that a technique thing? I think it is a bit of a technique thing. I think that it could be the way they're training, the tracks they're currently riding during the week. There's so many different factors that you can pull from, or strings you can pull on. But I can tell you, watching those two race at the races on the weekends, it looks like it comes easy to them. It looks like it's in slow mo almost. It doesn't look like they're on the edge ever, and they're able, and they're the fastest guys out there. So the rest of the racers need to kind of figure out and look and do a deep dive and figure out why that is. Why does it look easier for them than the rest of the field?
Yeah. And I think another one of those strings to pull on, Ryan, is the fact that they are brothers and they're close in age, and they're both at the peak at the same time, or at least peaking this year at the same time. And they get to work together and they get to push each other. And, we've talked about fast brothers before, and, the Stewarts, the Jones brothers, all back through history. And even, don't forget about Christoph Porcel, your old teammate at Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki. He and his brother Sebastian actually won a GP on the same day in the two different classes. It's just really new here in America with Jet and Hunter. And, the closest we've had to that, like I said, is James and Malcolm. You had your brother, Tyler didn't, I think take it as serious as you did, and was a little younger, but when you guys were kids, you had someone to ride with, someone to train with, someone to talk to.
Yep.
And the Lawrence brothers have taken that, Jet's 19 now and Hunter's 21, 22. And they've been together like inseparable since they were over in Europe, riding Suzuki's. And finally, Johnny O'Mara, yep. I think that he's giving the same lesson to the brothers, and they're just applying them differently. One's on a 250 now, and one's on a 450, I should say. And but they look so similar in their approach that it's changing the game a little, I think.
Yep. No, for sure. I agree. So, well, I think that, you know, that kind of concludes, wraps up. Well, you know, I think our major topics, I just want to say to the metal, great question from 120 underscore J, slide over into the DMs. We'll get you hooked up with the quad lock phone case. So thank you for those questions. Always, always good to see what the fans have to say. A quick rundown of motorsports this weekend. SMX Insider with Weege and JT comes out Thursday at 2 PM on YouTube. Saturday, round four of Pro Motocross starts at 10 AM Eastern with Race Day Live. Then the racing from High Point at 1. Both those shows are on Peacock. Post race show later on YouTube. Then on Sunday, we have a double dip of racing action, NTT IndyCar Series at the Road America at 1 p.m. Eastern on USA. Then MotoGP's German Grand Prix on CNNBC, or catch all the live action on MotoGP.tv. So I think that was a good show. Thank you, Davey. Let's move on and let's just do a little quick dive into this weekend High Point. How's the weather looking? I'm sure you just mentioned you were out weed eating out on the track, doing all the heavy lifting, let's call it.
It's raining right now. It's a live live interview. We got a head start on it. It's been incredibly dry in the Northeast. We were lucky not to have that Canadian forest fire smoke drift over as far south as Mount Morris, Pennsylvania, but it looks really good out there. And I imagine we're going to have a great big crowd. It's Father's Day weekend. And, High Point, that they come out in droves. You certainly remember that. In fact, I think you got your first national win at High Point.
I believe it was. It wasn't a 1-1, but I think it was maybe a 3-1 or 2-1. I believe it was my first outdoor national overall podium in the lights class. And always loved going there. It's a beautiful, picturesque scenery. And I think, it's great viewing for the fans. You can look over and you can just see all the campers, all the motorhomes, everybody slammed up against the fence. So should be a great weekend for you guys.
I certainly hope so. And thank you for having me on as a guest. I guess this show is Title IX, huh?
Yeah, that's right. For sure. So, yeah, I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening and or watching our partners at United Motorsports, Quadlock, and Boxo. Thank you, guys. Be sure to subscribe wherever you download your favorite podcast. You can also watch the pod on demand at Peacock or Motorsports at NBC YouTube page. Don't forget to like the show and leave your comments and questions. We will try to answer them whenever we can. Thank you, Davey. Ricky, I hope you're catching some fish. I know you're on vacation. We're picking up the load here for you, buddy. We'll be here to discuss High Point on Monday. So hopefully you're not too hungover from the sun and a few adult beverages. So yeah, Davey, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show. It's first time on Title 24. And I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. And you remain the best retired guy in the world.
There it is.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.